Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, before we get to Take-A-Mania, Seth said in the previous segment, I didn't think anything of it because I've done the same thing. Like, you were just looking around for something to eat. There was bread. There was cheese. There was mayo. And you made a cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
Texter has questions about your cheese sandwich. So many questions. Really only has two. Thin or thick sliced cheese? Was this a grilled cheese or just a cold cheese sandwich?
If it was a grilled cheese, I would have said a grilled cheese sandwich, obviously.
Yeah.
But my wife goes to bed earlier than me a lot, and I don't want to wake her up with the smell of grilled cheese wafting, into her room.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't have the issues I do. See, if I woke up at 11 p.m. and I smelled grilled cheese, I'm going
to
be out in
the kitchen.
Yes. But for some reason, I treat her like she's me. So, no, it's just cold cheese. And then I cut it off of I don't buy sliced cheese, okay? I slice it myself, either with a slicer or with a butcher's knife. On this particular evening, it was big old slabs of cheese with a butcher's knife.
Big slabs.
On whole wheat bread,
You would call it thick cheese then, thick cut cheese.
Yeah, thick cheese on whole wheat bread and with mayonnaise.
With mayonnaise, okay. Is your mayonnaise a particular brand, or are you a generic mayonnaise guy?
I don't know. My wife gets the stuff that's made with avocado oil.
So it's fancy. Yeah. You're a little. It sounds like kind of a fancy cheese sandwich.
It's not fancy. It's that I don't like. I just don't like to have seed oil or whatever in my.
But you got wheat bread. You got cheddar. Is it cheddar cheese? You said it's a cheddar.
Yeah. Extra sharp
wheat bread. Cheese. Extra sharp cheddar cheese. Avocado mayo. Man, in my house, it is Kroger white bread.
Yeah.
Kraft single with the generic mayo, man. Mine is a blue collar cheese sandwich. You're a little fancy, is all I'm saying.
I like and I don't even want to tell you when I do. Yeah, I like making homemade mayo as well too. So there's that. Yeah.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't even know how. I don't even know what's in mayo. For 56 years I've been on this earth.
It's egg yolks, oil, and then you can either use vinegar or lemon juice. I like lemon juice.
Okay. Wow. Seth
it's
makes
pretty
it
simple. There's a lot of stuff you eat that's like it's like super, super simple to make.
Okay, now here's what I need: a great condiment war amongst the 610 staff. I need you to start your own version of the OG mayo to go against John Lopez's OG barbecue sauce.
Yeah,
let's see who can move more. The OG
dude. That would be. I should make my own mayo, and I could call it Cracker Ass Racist.
Yes,
like I called myself yesterday morning.
Yeah. Certain parts of the country that'll sell really well. Yeah,
there. I got three DMs, like complimentary DMs on me calling myself a Cracker Ass Racist.
That's beautiful.
Yesterday.
That's beautiful.
All from peoples of color.
Yeah, right.
Seth, I like that you acknowledge that you're a Cracker Ass Racist.
Ironically, it was the most unifying thing that's happened on this show in years. Was Seth calling himself a cracker ass racist.
Cracker ass racist mayo.
All right.
When you want to keep it real.
And white. Yeah. All right.
Take-A-Mania.
Let's get to Take-A-Mania. Here's the reigning defending champion on Take-A-Mania. It's a two-headed monster, a tag team, if you will. Chad Ochocinco and Shannon Sharp on former Florida. Oh, now maybe on the practice squad for Tampa? I'm not sure. I don't know if Tampa just out and out cut him.
Yeah.
But this would be a reason why Ochocinco and Shannon Sharp would hate the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How they handled Desmond Watson.
The Buccaneers waived Desmond Watson, the former Gator rookie listed at 449 pounds with the Bucs. Are the Bucs giving up with Big Dez too soon, Ocho?
I would like for him to allow him to play and see how he plays at the size he's at now. He played at that size at Florida, so I understand what you guys are trying to do for safety reasons, but it's how he played at Florida. So why draft him if you're not going to allow him to play the game of football? Why not let him finish out his childhood dream? Why didn't you put him through the ringer like that?
He's 6'5".
Yeah. Big boy.
He only going to get so small through diet and exercise. He's 6'5"? Yeah. You're not going to get him to 350. Because if you get him to 350, he can't play football because you take it all his strength
hold
away.
Hold on. If he's how much Vita Vea weigh, huh?
Vita Vea probably 350.
So he's 365. Desmond Watson, what, 365?
450.
Oh,
It's a horrible take.
We can't. I love that take so much. Yeah. It's so bad, and yet I enjoy it without even laughing at them. It's Shannon Sharpe acting like somehow getting to 350 would be a miracle of modern science because he's 6'5" after
right,
all.
Right, right,
And then Ocho Cinco acting like the Bucks owe it to this guy so he can live out his childhood dream, as opposed to every other single guy who gets cut from a team.
Yep.
Or any guy who's currently on the roster and managing his weight properly has a dream of playing in the NFL.
Yep.
But then also him just not being aware of just how big he is.
Well, and the funny thing is, hey, Ben, can you play just the first 5 seconds of that thing again? I mean, Shannon Sharpe says it at the very beginning here.
Yeah. The Buccaneers waived Desmond Watson, the former Gator rookie, listed at 449 pounds.
Bingo, that's all we need. Yeah. I mean,
I can't follow Ocho Cinco for that one. I've done that many a times where you recite a quote, and I'm like, oh, what's that you said there now?
I know. I just want to point it out that Shannon Sharpe did put it out there on that.
And I'm not hating on those guys for that take. No. I admire the 6'5" thing just gets me.
This is the friendliest Take-A-Mania champ. Like, this is the friendliest we've been to a Take-A-Mania champ in the history of us doing this segment. All right, so let's see if anybody can take them down. Here's Brian Callahan, the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, following their loss to the Denver Broncos, where he should have challenged a catch made by wide receiver Alec Anemayor, however you pronounce his name, the kid from Stanford. Elbow came down in bounds, got called an incomplete pass, should have challenged it, but Brian Callahan says, no, you guys don't know the rule.
Challenge on the Isle Manor play where they moved it out of bounds on the sideline, it looked like his elbow hit inbounds first.
Yeah, you got to get a foot inbounds too. Which we didn't have a clean look at whether his foot was down as well. An elbow doesn't equal 2 feet, so his foot would have had to come down as well. We didn't have a clean look, so the call from upstairs was that it wasn't worth challenging.
The only thing about it, it's horrible. I feel like to be a Take-A-Mania champ, he should have been more of a jerk about it.
Yeah.
He sounded pretty matter-of-fact, and he was 100% wrong.
Yeah.
But he wasn't taking the reporter to task and being like, what are you talking about, you idiot?
Right.
Yeah, it's good. So, no, he doesn't, because it's not as entertaining.
Yep.
And because he didn't go full jerk on it, no, he doesn't. He doesn't overtake that.
Does not win. All right.
It's a really, really. Yeah.
I mean, it's a horrible mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, is a mistake a take? Just because you need take to spell mistake.
Yeah, it was just a really, really misinformed statement more so than it was a take.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Good call.
Let's stick with the Titans here and Cam Ward. I love when players do this. Here was Cam Ward talking about how difficult it was for his offensive line to block the Broncos in their game on Sunday.
So that's just stuff that I got to get better at week by week. And then at the end of the day, nobody going to be perfect. I want y'all to get up there and try to block one of them big boys on the D-line. It ain't that easy. So,
all we need.
Yeah,
we need the rest of it. I want y'all. He's in a room full of fat, out of shape media people.
Like, hey, listen, I know that the guys that were paying $10 to $20 million a year to block those guys weren't doing it, but can you, an English lit major, block them either?
Yeah. All right, so is that a bad take?
Okay, my stance on when guys are trying to defend their teammates or your own children or something, really, really hard. It's really hard to get Take-A-Mania champ with that. So, and also I did want to, when I saw it in transcript, it read worse than it sounded.
Yep.
I think he didn't really sound like he was being a jerk about it or anything. So no, he doesn't overtake the
champ. He does not win. Yep. All right. Kicks out again. Ocho and Shannon Sharpe. Boy, they have taken down a lot of challengers here. They've run the gauntlet. All right. This one's a short one. We've talked a lot this week about that Browns-Ravens game on Sunday, most of it within the framework of the Ravens celebrating the 30th anniversary of Art Modell bringing the team to Baltimore in front of the very team that they used to be, the Cleveland Browns. And a lot of Cleveland people think this is a big middle finger to the Browns. This take has nothing to do with that. This is purely player on player. Grant Delpit, the safety for the Cleveland Browns, was asked if it's hard – how hard is it to tackle Baltimore Ravens running back Derrick Henry?
How hard is he to bring down Derrick?
Not hard.
I mean, we're playing football, man. It's tackle football. Somebody got the ball, you got to bring them down.
Okay, now that's the entire take. That is an incorrect take. The stats would bear out it's hard to bring him down.
Now, Grant Delpit, he had a really hard hit to Derrick Henry last year. Mm. And the Browns have actually done better than you'd expect, or better than most teams versus Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
And they're talking a lot of smack all over
it's
the
wild,
place.
Dude. Like
Jerry Judy's been talking smack.
Yes.
There's a lot of smack talk going on there. It's not just Jim Schwartz's guys on defense. This is one, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this. Wait, let me check the rules. Yes, I am. I want to table this until next week.
Okay.
Because if Grant Delpit misses a single tackle in this game, and especially if Derrick Henry goes off for 200-some yards,
pie faces him.
We'll make our final judgment on this one next week after we've seen this game play
out. It's wrestling, man. We can make up whatever rules we want. Yeah.
If Delpit gets trucked, this is going to win next week.
Is this the most interesting game that has a double-digit spread that there's been in a long, long time? I'm super
intrigued. Is it double
digits? It's 10.5 points the Ravens are favored.
Did it open at 8.5?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay, but it's double digits right now.
Yeah, it's double digits,
But yeah, I believe it is. And part of that is because the Browns defense has had some good games against the Browns have beaten Lamar Jackson two of the last three times they've faced him. We've never beaten Lamar Jackson here in Houston.
No.
I stand impressed by the Cleveland Browns.
We've never come close to beating Lamar Jackson in Houston.
Lamar Jackson barely thinks of the Texans as an NFL football team.
Rightfully so. It's been a destruction every single time. All right. This next one, the bad take is not by J.J. Watt in this next one. This is J.J. Watt on the McAfee Show. The bad take comes at the very end of this by the mullet-headed minion of McAfee's right there. Is it Connor? Is that Connor the one?
I think so. Yeah.
The guys that sit off to the side, like the two old guys in the Muppet Show.
Those are like his boyhood buddies.
Yeah,
right?
I know. Yeah. I know. They are hell of a job of riding some coattails, man. Like they're doing good.
I think he makes them work. I think McAfee makes them work.
He should.
Yeah, he should.
So take a listen. I agree with all of what J.J. Watt is talking about because he is talking about getting rid of one of the things that I think is the scourge of society, the center part in his hair, but then Connor makes an awful recommendation at the end of this.
I'll tell you what, Jage, the hair is a little bit mesmerizing whenever it pops up underneath that hat.
It's great.
It's very full. You got a very full head of hair.
There's a lot up there. There is a lot up there.
Are you just going to keep it going? Maybe you should put that Mr. Incredible look, some people say that to me every once in a while when my hair gets a little bit too long, but for you, you could actually do the
Jimmy Neutron.
I'm really trying hard to. I don't love that it parts in the middle when I'm on the air. I'm trying to figure out how to part it a different way because I do not want to keep the middle part rolling.
Well, you can do that hard part that kind of forces your hair to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can rock the middle part, though. The middle part, I can't do the middle part of my hair at all. You can rock the middle part, so I wouldn't just abandon it after week one. You should give it a little time, see if you like it.
Terrible recommendation. The center part is awful.
The center part
is almost
never a good look.
Yeah.
It hasn't been throughout time in history.
Right, right.
There were times where back in the 30s or whenever when guys would have that greased center cut, like with a really or in the 80s when you'd have the moosed up center cut. It's never been a good look.
No.
Ever.
No.
And JJ's does always seem like kind of a little bit windblown.
Yeah.
I know JJ, I'm going to give you – for JJ actually gets a lot more – social media attention for his hairs and switching it up. Because usually it still looks like he's a bigger guy, but he's trying to have a stylish haircut. And people love to have fun with that. And I think JJ knows it. So I think he just kind of leans into the hilarity of it all.
The one thing that JJ has not had with it, by the way, does that take win or does it not win?
No, it doesn't win.
Yeah,
no,
it doesn't win. No, okay. Yeah. So I didn't think it would.
Endorse it. I encourage them. They're encouraging him to keep that thing going on.
You're glad
nobody's
they did
ever.
That.
No, JJ looks like he's perpetually like he could be doing better with his hair.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever seen him just try a nice, just like a really good high fade, like a Kyle Shanahan type or something.
I don't know that.
Especially if you go to if you get a really nice high fade as a white boy, you get a certain level of respect from your teammates too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know? So maybe his head just isn't shaped right for it.
It's a unifying haircut right there.
There's nothing better when you get a really good high fade and black guys are giving you compliments on it. You're like, yeah, that's right.
You've had that before. Like one of the most famous pictures of you, your headshot early on in your career, you had that, right? Like did you
Oh, the most famous headshots of me?
I mean, well, the one
oh, where my neck is huge.
The one that makes its rounds among Texan fans. You had
if
kind
you
of
do
that
it
thing
right.
Going.
You know, I think JJ's worried he's going to look like a meathead, but that's why you got to get a really good high fade.
Right, right.
I had one of the women that used to cut my hair. Was one of the best compliments she ever received was when somebody on Twitter had said "Black Barber Seth," and I brought it to her, and she was like, "Oh,
wow, yeah." And ironically, that cut on a cracker ass racist too.
Yes, that was on cracker ass racist mayo has got to have to be me with a perfect fade. Yeah,
big neck shot. All right, last one here because I think this one's got a shot. It's been. I mean, Ocho and Shannon are just plowing through all these guys right now in the take-a-mania. Last one. This is from NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, who earlier this week, when asked about the expense of streaming NBA games these days, basically said, it's okay, the poors have highlights to watch on social media.
There's a huge amount of our content that people can essentially consume for free. I mean, this is very much a highlights-based sport, you know, so, you know, Instagram, TikTok, you know, Twitter, you name it, any service, you know, the New York Times for that matter, to the extent that your content is not behind a paid firewall. There's an enormous amount of content out there, YouTube, by another example, that is advertising based that consumers can consume.
Okay.
This is a tough one for me because part of it is a lot of it has to do with like the core issue that the NBA has. In people consuming only the highlights, it's a height of irony for him to give a bad answer about how people should be happy with not being able to watch the game, while also kind of saying the opposite of what they're probably saying behind closed doors. Is that, man, the younger generation seems to care about highlights and individuals more than they do the teams themselves or the actual games.
Yep.
That, and yet I feel like it just doesn't reach. It doesn't reach the emotional side of me, or it doesn't make me laugh the same way Shannon and Chad Johnson do.
Okay, let me give you one more. I'll make one more nugget of not. I'm not argue it. I'm kind of on the Ocho and Shannon side of this. This is to me why I find this take offensive with Adam Silver, is that the biggest thing they've been trying to do in the NBA for the last few years is find a way to make the games. Every game feels somehow important amidst this wave of load management. Man, they're making rules where guys have to play a certain number of games to be eligible for awards. Like, that has been the scourge of the league, has been our regular season doesn't mean anything anymore. He basically just said none of the games mean anything because you can watch the highlights.
It's Rob Manfred saying that the trophy is just a hunk of metal.
It is.
That's part of it. You know what, Seth? It can't be all about your own selfish desires anymore. And as much as I want to keep listening to that Shannon Sharpe and Chad Johnson take over and over again, we've got a new champion.
We need a new champ. The pin.
It was linking Rob Manfred's comment about the World Series trophy being just a hunk of metal.
Yeah.
That did
it's
it
on
for
that
me.
Level.
Yes.
This
was really, really bad. This was a horrible, horrible take.
This might be this. And by the way, there's no rule that says we can't keep playing that one every week, that Ocho and Shannon one. We can do that if we want to. This might be if we're using the metaphor of wrestling and Adam Silver pinning Chad Ochocinco and Shannon Sharpe, this might be the least realistic imagery of someone pinning somebody. Skinny ass alien looking Adam Silver. pinning Shannon Sharpe and Ochocinco.
You know what the best thing about this is? That one of Shannon Sharpe's core arguments was, how could you expect Desmond Watson to get down to 350? He's 6'5". Well, let me present 6'3" Adam Silver. Tell me how far.
6'3", buck 45.
Sure, he weighs less than 350 pounds, but it's because he's only 6'3".
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. That's 2 inches.
If he were 6'5", he'd be 350 at least.
Okay,
yes.
I'm going to ChatGPT right now, and I'm saying, please create an image of Adam Silver at 365 pounds.
Watching highlights on his phone.
Yes. All right, Payne and Pendergast. With you. We'll get to the Texans in the final segment. Tom Brady was on with Colin Cowherd yesterday and had one of the more interesting things. I think one of the most interesting things that I've heard in discussing the development of quarterbacks And I think you can look at C.J. Stroud through a certain prism in hearing what Brady has to say about this. We'll do that coming up next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know where I'm at on Tom Brady, Seth, as far as a commentator goes, because I don't get to watch many of the games because we work on Sundays. But I really do enjoy how much TV and radio he's doing because of Fox. Like, he's showing up on all these Fox shows now, and he and Cowherd are really good together. I think Cowherd asks some really good questions.
And he's pretty opinionated when it comes to the actual quarterback position, which isn't something you always get out of – really, any of the all-time greats. Joe Montana was notoriously unopinionated. Like, when he tried to be a commentator, he didn't want to criticize anybody. He didn't want to say anything. And even Peyton. I think Peyton's very careful about what he says. You know, and you're not going to hear him necessarily roast anybody. I don't know. Now, Tom Brady, he roasts quarterbacks in general. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't necessarily, that I've seen, roasted individual quarterbacks. But he gets kind of surly talking about kids these days.
No.
He's turned into a grumpy old man.
The closest we saw from Brady roasting anybody was before he even became a commentator. He was still a player, where he was talking about the Raiders not wanting to sign him in free agency. He was talking about that on LeBron's barbershop show there. And said, "You're keeping that MF-er?" Talking about Derek Carr. That's the
closest. And it turns out, because we've been able to put all the pieces together, he was talking about Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Basically confirmed by Mark Davis last week on a podcast. Yeah.
So here's Brady. This was an interesting conversation, I thought. Here's Brady with Cowherd. Two cuts coming up here. The first is talking about how beneficial it was for him and how beneficial it's been for others, including Patrick Mahomes, to sit and watch as a young quarterback your first season, two or three, than getting thrown in the fire right away.
Patrick flat out said, I can't thank Alex Smith enough for everything that he did for me. All I did was ask him questions in the meeting room my first year. And I look at my first year. That's all I did with Drew Bledsoe. Aaron Rodgers had 3 years to sit behind Brett Favre. Eli Manning sat behind Kurt Warner. And there's a lot of guys, and I would say a lot of successful players, that weren't kind of thrown into the fire, because what happens is – you can lose your confidence so fast, because when the real games are happening and the blitzes are coming and you don't understand protection and you don't understand coverage and you start taking hits and you start throwing interceptions, you begin to lose confidence that, hey, I don't even know how to play football. I don't know how to go down and lead our team to score points. I can't even make and complete a pass.
The part that resonated with me on that one, Seth, and that made me think this would be interesting to listen to on the show, is, and I don't think this has anything to do with the fact that C.J. Stroud didn't get to sit and watch for a couple of years, but I felt like the quarterback he was describing towards the end there was the quarterback that was getting his ass handed to him for 3 or 4 weeks in the middle of last season. And I don't know how much of that has carried over, because there are times that, I mean, you could argue that C.J. Stroud as a quarterback, two seasons and one game in, looked the most comfortable the early to midway part of his rookie year.
Right. Oh, but and it's classic. It's a cliche, and I think people get tired of hearing it, but it's a cliche for a reason. It's that this is why you see so many promising rookie performances. It's that you're kind of ambushing the league, and the league doesn't have enough film on you to really know what makes you uncomfortable. So that whole rookie season kind of becomes an experiment by the league in general at seeing what you can and cannot do, and then they have a full offseason to dissect it, and then, hey, guess what? It gets a lot harder. It gets a lot harder for rookie offensive coordinators as well, because that was the first time Bobby Slowick was going through, everybody really has a good idea of my play-calling tendencies and what I like to do with C.J. Stroud, all of that. So that part of it, there's part of it. Like, for one, there's no correct way to handle a quarterback.
Right.
I think that But when you try to say that there is one way you should handle a quarterback, people that think a starting quarterback should start right away can point to all the different examples of guys who have done it and it's worked out well. The problem is you can't go back in time and take the guys who started right away in bad circumstances and play out like how it would have happened if it had worked out, if they handled it differently. You know, yeah. I can't go back in time and see what David Carr looks like sitting behind a veteran quarterback
for
a couple of years.
That's right.
Yeah, Philip Rivers got to sit behind Drew Brees. Yep. All those scenarios, you just don't know. And I think it's individual and unique. I think that, I mean, last year, the beginning of last year, you remember, or 2 years ago, CJ's rookie year, the thing that I was most nervous about was there were elements of the first year of the franchise existence in 2002 when we had a rookie quarterback and he was starting alongside six other rookies on offense. And there's only so much you can do with something like that. The beginning of CJ's career, you had a rookie offensive coordinator, a rookie center, snapping to a rookie quarterback, and then the center ended up being a hodgepodge of different guys. But like that part of it, I think sometimes people are either a little too cocksure of themselves that like, oh no, people, he'll figure it out, he'll be fine. It's hilarious because pitchers can spend 7 years in the minors, mm-hmm. and like, yeah, because it takes a long time to really develop a pitcher before he's ready for Major League Baseball. But in football, for whatever reason, it's like, oh, you've been in the NFL for 2 weeks now, huh?
Yeah.
There you go. You're a starter.
Yeah.
That's the way it's got
to
be.
Well, I would add to that, Seth, you're kind of pointing out all the newness of CJ's rookie head coach greenlighting the whole thing. You know, like it's D'Amico's decision to let all these guys, to delegate all this stuff to all these guys. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. One more from Tom Brady says, sometimes the meeting room is the better place for a young quarterback to learn.
If you're sitting in the meeting room and learning, I actually think that's the best way to learn because you can understand it on the board. You can understand it on the video screen. You can go out to a walkthrough and then you can learn and practice by making a lot of, good decisions, bad decisions, without necessarily being critiqued from the outside world and losing, look, you got PFF grading you every week, like you were just referencing there before I came on. They're grading you. And now you go as a first year quarterback, you barely know. And now everyone's telling you suck, and it takes a while to regain your confidence.
Yeah.
You lose your whole fan base, and it's really unfortunate. But that's very much the state of the league. And I think we've dumbed down the game in so many ways to allow for a lesser caliber developed player to get in there and lead an organization.
My only thing with that cut, Seth, is that you can be the starting quarterback of a team and still do all that learning in the meeting room that he's talking about.
Yeah.
You still do all those walkthroughs. This isn't something that's exclusive to backup quarterbacks learning in the meeting room and the starting guy is picking his nose in the corner or something. And the other part there, like honestly, if I have a quarterback who is letting PFF grades affect his performance, you've got the wrong quarterback.
Yeah, there's and again with the quarterback position, everything is so unique and individual. I guess the sum total of all the pressure that's on a guy is probably what Brady is talking about there. Yeah. I mean, Brady kind of had the ideal situation was because. As a sixth-round draft pick, you don't have those expectations. And then he gets dropped onto a team that has a strong rushing attack and a really good defense and all of those other things. And there wasn't a lot of pressure on him necessarily. It was a different league. Even though it was 2002 when they won their first Super Bowl, it was a different era in terms of quarterback play where everything, because of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning mostly, everything is geared so much more towards the quarterback being the absolute most important thing on a team. And if you don't have one, you're more likely than not screwed. I think that part of it, Brady probably looks at that and thinks that, yeah, that's just a different environment to operate. He kind of, I don't want to say he was coddled because he wasn't obviously coddled, but he didn't have the same expectations that a lot of the guys do.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September the 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus. All right, final segment coming up. We'll find out what's going on In the Loop. We'll get the weekly Caserio preview of the opponent. Also, did you feel the same way watching last week's YouTube broadcast as one prominent former NFL player did? We will have that for you as well coming up next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, the Brady audio is interesting, looking at it through a Texans lens, and we have a texter saying, the guys Brady named all had good QBs to sit behind. Stroud did not. And I don't think they drafted C.J. Stroud with the idea that he was going to sit for 2 years behind anybody.
Right, yeah, look, and that's where it's how it's every single circumstance is different. I don't think there's one standard way you should do it. Some guys are obviously ready. And the other thing, too, is, ironically enough, it's great that Pat Mahomes had a year to sit behind a good quarterback, and he had an offensive coordinator in Andy Reid that does a really good job with quarterbacks, obviously. But that Pat Mahomes was really raw. Like, he was one of these air raid quarterbacks that just really needed to learn a lot. But I still have a hard time thinking that if he had gotten thrown into the fire with with Andy Reid as his coordinator, that he wouldn't have ultimately been okay. But but you never know. You can't run the experiment. You can't just go back in time and figure out and see what happens.
You can't. All right. Did many of you feel similar to Chris Long in watching the Chiefs and the Chargers a week ago today? Game was on YouTube, and YouTube, which I think what they did makes sense given that it's YouTube, is they took a lot of their streamers and put them out there.
They had a lot of influencers and streamers and all that, and they were looking for more of a worldwide audience. And just by way of reference, Chris Long is 40 years old.
Okay.
So probably 40 years old might be like right down the line of the I don't even talk about millennials or Gen Z, but kind of like grew up with an iPhone in your hands or didn't.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So here's Chris Long on his Greenlight podcast saying he felt like a boomer watching the YouTube broadcast.
I watched the YouTube broadcast of the game in Sao Paulo, and I felt immediately like somebody who was being ushered to an early grave. Like, it just felt like, hey, like, time to die, boomer. Like, you don't know who destroying is. Time to die. You don't want to see Mr. Beast's like giant f-ing pearly white smile as he Squid Games to, you know, NFL fans like through a f-ing goalpost. No problem. Just go to bed. You're old anyways. The whole thing to me, it's jarring, and I understand like what old people feel like when programming changes, because like I just don't get it. And I'm old,
right?
And nobody wants to be the guy that's like is sh-ing on like streamers or like it's a new, you know, I don't want to sh-ing on young people, but I'm like, man, I really felt it the other night. Like, I'm not gonna throw a fit. I'm still gonna watch the game. Saying the YouTube is inherently an old man thing, and I called it the YouTube.
I really like Chris Long.
He said he watched the YouTube broadcast, so I give him a pass on that. You're like, you know, those kids on the YouTube.
Yeah.
I think that that's the key is every time I go on social media now, I end up seeing something where I'm like, I don't understand it. I don't get it. And I don't have the energy or time to actually really try to understand it. But I try really hard not to get grumpy about it. I just be like, it's something I'm not going to get. All right, that's cool. I give up. I'm going to move on. Because it does. It's frustrating. I don't know who these people are.
Well,
and I don't understand what they're saying.
And it's thrown in your face on the very thing that you absolutely love watching that feels like it should be timeless, right?
The
football should be the thing that should unite teenagers with 85-year-olds, right? We can all speak the common language of football. But then why is that guy on here right now?
You know what it is, though, too, man? It's the same way. It's probably if in the 1960s or 70s, you saw Joe Namath on the sideline in a fur coat.
Yeah,
And you're like, what the hell's going on with this?
Okay.
But what the hell?
You know what's been making the rounds quite a bit lately, on my timeline at least, is old cuts of NFL Today back on CBS when Brent Musburger was the studio host.
Yeah.
And you had Irv Cross, you had Jimmy the Greek, And then they brought in Jane Kennedy, who was clear eye candy on that show, but she was doing like weather reports and things like that.
Yeah.
Now I can see people not getting as, at least men, not getting nearly as upset about that. Like, oh, okay. I don't know who this Jane Kennedy is, but I sure am glad she's on my TV. I don't think guys are saying that about Mr. Beast or Destroying. But yeah. but they're throughout, like, these, the shows never evolve, or the broadcasts don't evolve if you don't try new things.
Yeah, there's always something that's going to be different than what you like. Pretty much, really, most people feel that the best music ever made was whatever music they liked when they were like 18 to 22 years old.
Yes.
And like, nope, no, they just don't make music like this anymore. So likewise with sports or anything else like that, whatever you remember from the happiest days of your life or when you were young and everything's being imprinted into your brain and hardwired into it, you can never, it will never be as good as that. And that's how it's been for several million years now. That's just the way it is. So you just got to understand that and release yourself from whining about it.
16 to 28, that's the window for me. Like, anything happened in those years, like, is going to be the best. You know,
we have gone on for, it's an unbroken streak of this new generation not being as smart or as tough or as anything as we are.
That's right. It's toughness.
And yet somehow the species has endured.
It's
despite
toughness.
Every single generation being dumber, softer, weaker.
We're still here.
All of those, somehow. Despite our obvious superiority.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm having fun with, honestly, is especially because I'm in Gen X, Sean. Yeah. That you're just in Gen X, right? You're not a boomer. You're Gen X.
I think I'm Gen X. Yeah.
You're Gen X. Yeah.
Very, very end of it. Yeah.
Our generation was known for its apathy. And it's hilarious to me now to see Gen Xers become grumpy old people that try to act like we had it all figured out when we were in our 20s. As if you can't think of 27 jackasses you knew when you were a senior in high school.
Yep. All right, we'll talk to the guys on In the Loop in just a minute. Before we do that, the Texans do play the Bucks on Monday, just to get a little bit ready here for that. Here was Nick Caserio on Texans All Access. People love the Caserio rundowns because it's like he has the depth chart in front of him, but he does not have the depth chart in front of him. This is the defense that Nick Caley is going to try to bust through and score a touchdown against this week as the coordinator.
Defensively, I mean, Todd's a head coach / defensive coordinator, play caller. They have a number of coordinators on that side of the ball. Coach Foot, Coach Edwards, George Edwards has been there. But this is an aggressive attacking. They blitz a lot, and they pick their spots, but they're very aggressive in how they play. Really good front. I mean, they got a load in the middle of the defensive line of Vita Vea. I mean, not too many people do what he does at, 350 pounds. A guy kind of a little bit underrated, younger player that's on the upswing is Diaby, who led them in pressures last year, and they signed Raddick in the offseason. Braswell, who they drafted in the second round last year, is kind of coming. So, pretty formidable front. Levante David is the longest tenured, Buck. And then Savassier Dennis is kind of inserted in there next to him, very similar to Toa Toa. I think he went the same round as we took Toa Toa. So it looks like he's giving them some good snaps. And then Antoine Winfield is one of the better safeties in the league. So, I mean, it's a good overall football team. They had a lot of problems. They won on the road, last week and beat a good Atlanta team. So certainly going to be a challenge for us. And, we just got to go out there and try to play good football.
Vita Vea is the big headline one there for a team in the Texans that's trying to run the ball between the tackles. Vita Vea is the classic 350-pound immovable object at nose tackle, but he can also rush the passer. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like a Vince Wilfork type of guy in that, all right, he doesn't look like he's doing the stuff that he's doing and the stats that he's racking up. He is a menace in the middle. And this is the Texans offensive line that didn't do an awesome job getting movement on double teams and everything else like that last week. So they've got another big challenge. The difference between the Rams defense and the Bucks defense when it comes to how they play against the Texans offensive line is that I don't think this Bucks defensive line is as physically punishing as the Rams defensive line. Caserio mentioned Diaby. Diaby's kind of like, he's a pass rushing threat in the vein of a traditional outside linebacker pass rushing threat.
Finesse.
He's not a huge guy or anything. He's athletic. He can rush the passer, but he's not physically bruising the way the Rams
Jared Verse.
Yeah. So it's still a challenge, but I don't think it's necessarily quite as much of a challenge to your toughness and intestinal fortitude. But they blitz a lot. They do a lot of exotic stuff. A lot of the things that gave the Texans some issues last week, the Texans have those same challenges this week versus Todd Bowles' defense.
Say who's not expecting a ton of points in this game or by the Texans? The experts, the betting community. Over under on this game is 42.5.
Mm-hmm.
That's not super low. You can start to get into the 30s. That's super low. But 42.5, I mean, for some context, the total on the Rams game last week with the Texans was 44.5 for most of the time. And I said the week leading up, that's going under. This is going to be an under game, and it ended up being a – do you feel like this is an under game at 42.5?
I'm going to take the over just because I think that it's not like I feel awesomely optimistic about the offense.
Yeah.
But – I do think that they're going to have opportunities downfield when the protection holds up, if and when the protection holds up. I like the receivers matchup versus the Bucs defense. But then also, some of the things that hurt the Texans offense were fixable things, both from CJ getting the protections right, but then also some of the errors in pass protection. I think Nick Chubb being back there as a pass protector more than some of the young guys is hopefully going to be – it's not even a physical thing. It's a mental thing. It's that Chubb can have a stabilizing effect, I think, on a lot of that. Yeah. We talk about getting in and out of the huddle quickly, all those things. I like having veteran Nick Chubb out there just to operate like an actual offense and to operate like you've got veterans on the field.
I am taking the over on Nico Collins' targets and the over on Nick Chubb touches this weekend. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to try to feed Nico. And D'Amico's already said we're going to feed Nick Chubb.
Yeah. Yeah, and he didn't say we're going to run more necessarily. It's just that Nick Chubb's going to get a larger share of the carries.
That's right. That's right.
What was what is the over-under on number of carries for Nick Chubb?
I don't know what it is. I just know I'm going to take the over on it. I'm blindly saying I'm going to take the over. I think they're going to feed. If I had to guess, I would say if it were just carries, and carries is probably it because he's not going to – he may catch one pass out of the backfield the whole game. I would put the number. He got 13 in this last game. I put it at 17.5. Put it there. 17.5. Would you take the over?
12.5.
It's 12.5?
12.5.
Okay, well, I'm going way over. That's fewer than he had in the last game.
And you're talking about Nick Chubb rushing.
Nick Chubb rushing attempts. Yes.
12.5.
Yeah, it's 12.5. Oh, yeah, that's. Dude. I would take the over on
I
that.
I would fire on the over. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
You've got the head coach flat out saying they're going to get lean more into him after a week in which he had 13 carries. I mean,
You've got to listen to Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing because you might wind up with enough money to go lease a vehicle or something like that because we're just giving away cash here. John Lopez, Reggie Atitula, they are here. Hello, gentlemen.
Howdy. Can I ask you a question pursuant to what we were just discussing?
Yes, pursuant, yes.
I like words. And it's because I'm wearing this Nigeria jersey. Three carries, Damian Pierce. Three carries, Woody Marks. Yeah. Two carries, Dare Ogunbowale. Where do those carries come from if we're just shuffling around the carries that you already have?
This is what I would do. My carry distribution, assuming it's a game where they're not getting behind by three touchdowns in the first quarter, assuming this is a game where they're battling back and forth and it's a 23-20 game in the end, I would distribute the carries. I would give 20 carries to Nick Chubb.
Ooh,
number. I would. And he's the only one that's proven.
Yeah. No, that, I'm not doubting you. That's a big number.
It's a big number, but again, this isn't a game where the Texans are going to be trying to grind clock in the fourth quarter. I would give Woody Marks a few carries. He would be my change of pace guy, Woody Marks. I wouldn't have Damian Pierce getting near the field. I might not even have Damian Pierce active. I might activate British Brooks because he can play fullback for you a little bit. Maybe a touch for Dare on a third down in the second quarter, like a draw or like a swing pass.
Yeah, and Dare, it might be if you have a long drive and you're still trying to get Nick Chubb just to be, you're still trying to be careful with him and be sure that you're giving him a blow on the sideline or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd have CJ in there with three or four scrambles of his own. Yeah. He clearly, that's one thing that's carried over from the postseason last year when CJ started to use his legs more. He's like, ooh, I got magic legs. He carried it 5-6 times in this game, and I think he's gotten more cognizant of, hey, the defense is really tightening things up in the secondary on our receivers. Right. I can go get 10 yards or whatever. That's how I would have it. I would not let Woody Marks wither on the bench. I would make sure he still is part of the game plan. But
I totally agree. Everything you said.
It has to be the Chubb show.
By the way, Nico Collins, receptions, 5.5.
Receptions, 5.5. Does it have
they
targets?
They don't have targets. They don't have targets.
Prize Picks does. It was 8.5 last week.
Oh, yeah?
I would go way over 8. Not way over, because it's hard to get somebody 10 targets in a game. But I think they're going to try to get the ball to Nico. Yeah.
Oh, it's got to be.
Do you like my distribution there on that?
I've got a little bit of trepidation, and it's based off of a single image that we saw during that broadcast, which is going to the sideline and seeing him just – just needing the oxygen.
Three tugs on the water bottle.
And I'm like, all right, so we're going to turn this up to 20. And maybe this is just
spread
the ramp
out
up
judiciously.
That's necessary.
Yeah, spread out judiciously. Yeah, so... So what's the question of the day, fellers?
All right, so yesterday, Figgy had a confession. We're mixing segments here about he was behind a police officer at a red light.
Okay.
Light turned green. Officer didn't move.
Oh.
Still didn't move. Still didn't move.
Officer, ironically, might have been on his phone.
Absolutely, yeah. He was. And so Figgy refused to tap the horn. He didn't want to.
Oh, Figgy didn't tap the horn.
No, I didn't tap the horn. I remember as a kid, somebody, an older guy telling me how he did the same thing, and the cop hit the lights and got out the car and said, don't you ever blow the horn. And
so you remembered that.
I'd never forget that.
So the craziest, go ahead, but the question is, the craziest way or craziest reason you were ever pulled over or had an exchange with an officer.
Okay.
I wish I had this story during when we were trying to encourage kids to read more. Now, since we've stopped encouraging children to read, this story is basically going to be wasted. But I told you guys the books that helped me out in my athletic career.
Yeah.
One of the books that's probably saved me the most money in my life was when I was in high school, I bought this book. It was by a retired New York State trooper. I can't remember the name of the book, but it was about how to get out of a speeding ticket. And I cannot tell you, I'd have to sit down and think about how many times I've gotten out of speeding tickets in my life, mostly because I read that book as a young man and used all of the advice so successfully.
Useful, Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, he's from
We need that book for the streets, man. We need that book for the streets, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a huge part of it is just recognizing the stress level of the officer and doing everything you can to just minimize his stress level or her stress level. It's like pulling as far off to the side of the road as possible, turning your lights on, windows down, hands at 10 and 2. But then also in the kind of conversation you have, you know, when he comes up the door and all of that. It was very, very helpful for me. So, kids, if you want to get away with crime, be sure you read
advice.
As much as
good
possible.
Right.
Don't be like one of these stupid criminals. Be an informed criminal.
We're going to need a minute for mine, so I'm going to get this.
That's fine.
I'm
going
to get this the station ID in. You're listening to KLTAM, KLTFM, HD2 Houston, an Odyssey sports station. Crosstalk is brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. Here's mine.
Okay.
Back when I was in high school, me and my buddies used to, like in the summer, we'd play Sandlot baseball.
Mm-hmm.
In the fall, we would play Sandlot football. In the winter, we would play street hockey on a cul-de-sac that one of my buddies lived on. And it would be the best when the snowplow would come and plow all the snow. It was like having boards. You check people into the... All right, so we were playing street hockey, and we needed to bring one of the nets home. I owned one of the nets.
Mm-hmm.
Just gotten it brand new. And I needed to get it home. The cul-de-sac we played on was across town from where I lived. So me and my buddy Ross Mandel, who is the one that is left off of our group text. We have a group text with Ross and a group text without Ross.
That says all I need to know.
No, Ross is a great dude. I had to get this net home for the first time. And so what we did, we drove right through the center of our town doing this, is we put the net on top of the car, my car.
Mm-hmm.
And Ross sat inside the net to make sure it didn't fall off the top of my car. We literally went, and he had a Whalers hockey mask on. So we literally drove through the center of town thinking this was okay. Like, we're going slow, you know? We get pulled over. I go home with the ticket to my parents, and I totally lied. And I said, well, no, we got caught because Ross was sitting shotgun holding the net from inside the car. And my dad goes, oh, we can fight that. We can fight that.
Like, you had him embarrassed in front of the people.
I've already lied. Oh, boy. Oh,
in front of the hoes.
We can fight that.
Is that what we're calling the court now?
Yeah. So we go to court.
Oh, you went all, you didn't even.
I didn't confess because I was hoping, like I've heard these stories about if the cop
doesn't show up,
then you get away with it. That was what I was banking on. I was not banking on the cop going back to the station and doing a police report.
Oh, God. No.
And so I get up there in front of the judge, and the judge is looking at this piece of paper, and I'm standing there like,
lying your
this
ass
isn't
off.
Good. Well, I didn't say anything. They go, Sean Pendergast versus the town of Simsbury or whatever. And I get up there, and I haven't said anything yet, and the judge just looks at the piece of paper, and he looks at me, he goes, inside the net on top of the car? What are you doing here? My dad was in the courtroom.
Yeah.
He was sitting. Oh, boy. He looked like George Costanza would say, looked like that time I told him I wanted to be a ventriloquist. He was not happy. Yeah. I did not drive for a long time.
I guess
that.
Not. Yeah. I guess not.
So what did you do? You just stayed mute and you didn't perjure yourself or anything?
No. Well, no. He had the police report. No, I'm like, yeah, that's what happened. And I my back to my dad because I'm standing up there at the, you know, at the whatever they call it there. I'm staring at the judge. And I'm like, man, I don't even want to turn around. I don't want to turn around for 10 years right now. So we have a good laugh about that, me and my buddies. But the best part was my buddy wearing a
Whalers
Jason,
mask.
Like Jason, a Whalers fan.
Well, safety's important, clearly.
Yes. So, yeah, right. Safety with exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, so that was my story. I can't wait to
I've got two good ones. 1040.
1040, okay.
One of them Mark Vandermeer instigated.
Really? You got one as an adult, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, fellas, have a great show. Seth, antibodies to you. I will see
antibodies
you on Monday.
Antibodies and safe travels to you, Sean.
Thank you very much. You as well.
I get pulled over on your 0.7-mile drive home.
Let's relive it, and you can play the part of Ross Mandel, Seth. Let's drive right down
Seth
Westheimer.
Would he fit in a...
He would not fit in that hockey. Well, he'd fit in it, but it wouldn't be comfortable.
I want to pull the Teen Wolf. I want to go get a box truck of some sort and surf on the top of it down Buffalo Speedway and see how the heat handles my ass.
In a Whalers hockey mask. Let's do it. Yeah. All right. We are done. We're out of time. Station ID we got. D&M Leasing we got?
We're good.
Reggie Atatula, John Lopez?
Yeah.
Figgy, we got all three of you guys? Yeah. We're good. Okay, just checking to make sure. They're in the loop. Have a great show, fellas.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.